Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our session where we're going to talk about Project Orleans and the experience of building Halo 4 cloud services with it. It's the end of the day. You're probably tired and overwhelmed with the information you've received so far. So we think we'll start with the quick video reminder from last year.
Halo is a rich, immersive story with millions of loyal and dedicated fans. We deliver an exciting and engaging experience to these fans. They need to know what the hot playlist is today. They need to know what the challenges are. They need to know where their friends have been, what their friends have been playing. Have their friends gotten more medals than them? They need to know all of this, and they need to react to it and interact with their friends in real time. We need to deliver hundreds of thousands of updates per second to millions of players across the Halo universe. We need to get them the right information to the right device at the right time. There was nothing off the shelf that solved the problems we needed to solve at the scale we needed to solve them. So we turned to Microsoft's Extreme Computing Group.
Hundreds of thousands of requests per second across thousands of servers in real time. These guys are crazy. But in extreme computing, those are the kind of challenges we'd like to tackle.
So we showed you this video last year. I'm Sergey Bykov. I lead the team in Microsoft Research that built Orleans. And we're going to talk about it today. So when we started the project several years ago, we had this vision that building modern cloud services, I mean those that need to scale for millions of users across thousands of servers with high demand, like low latency and high throughput that we need today, building such services shouldn't be as difficult as it was then and still difficult today. So we started working in research. We worked for a while, and we built something. And we decided to share it with a select set of internal product groups. They used it to build systems. They liked it. They came back and said they really liked it. Then we ran a private preview program with some of the folks from Europe that I see in the room. And the feedback was also very positive. People were saying and asking, when is it going to be available publicly? When can we really use it with our customers? So I'm very happy to announce today that we're making the Project Orleans available to all of you today so that you can benefit from all the good stuff we put there. So it's available as public preview. Thank you. So I could spend hours talking here today about Orleans, about all the innovations we did there, cool features, and how you can benefit from them. But we thought a better approach would be for you to hear the Orleans story from somebody who's been using technology for quite some time, who's been dependent on this technology, and can give you the user insight into it. So the Halo services team, they came to us more than 2 years ago, and they said, hey, you have this Orleans thing, and we like it. We want to put it in production, and we want to have it in production in about 3 months. And this is where I turned to my team and say, well, these guys are crazy. So the quote in the video is real. I told them, after those guys left the room, I told them, look, nobody in the right mind would take a dependency on technology from research, which is still in the prototype form, even though it was advanced prototype, but prototype, and put it in production to run their most demanding, most unforgiving load through the system. But we decided that we'd do whatever it takes to make those crazy guys, even though very capable guys, to succeed. And so with that, I want to turn it over to Hoop Somwar, who is an architect on the cloud services with the Halo team. And he's going to do the rest of the talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Sergey. So as Sergey said, my name is Hoop Somwar. I'm a developer and architect on the Halo cloud services team. And so I'm here to talk about how Halo used Orleans to build the services that powered the Halo 4 blockbuster video game. So, what's Project Orleans? In my mind, when I talk about Orleans, I think about it as a programming model and a runtime that makes it possible for us to build cloud-native services. When I think about a service, when I use the term cloud-native, that means that this service is actually built and from the ground up with the cloud in mind and with the different ways you need to think about cloud programming thought of from the beginning of service development. And that's what we did with these services. So for those of you who have never heard of Halo, it's a very rich experience for a lot of users. It has a lot of connectivity between people, between friends, between their families, and most importantly, between people and their frenemies. one thing that a lot of people like to do, I like to do myself, is to go to Halo Waypoint and look up statistics about the games that I've played. I can learn about the different games I've played, how many games I've played. I can see how many hours I've spent playing Halo. I can dig into the games that I've played and see how I did in each of these different games. I can look at games that I've played in the cooperative side of Halo as well as the competitive side, and I can dig into it and see how well I'm doing on a per map basis, on a per game type basis. I can even find out how well I'm doing with a specific weapon in the Halo universe. And I like to think that it makes me a better Halo player. It doesn't actually do that, but I like to think that it will eventually someday make me a better Halo player. A lot of people love these statistics that we provide. So I'm going to talk about waking up the chief. If any of you have played Halo 3, you'll know that at the end of Halo 3, Master Chief, the hero of the story, gets into this cryo tube. And then he tells his AI companion, Cortana, to wake him up when she needs him. And that's kind of what we had to do with Halo 4. 343 Industries decided that we were going to bring back the Master Chief story. And as part of doing that, we had to bring back all the features that we had with Halo 3 and all the rich interactivity, but we also wanted to bring some new stuff to the table. Now, Halo has always relied on some really interesting services to be able to enhance the experiences for people. There are services like presence and matchmaking, some of which we get from Xbox Live, some of which we enhance ourselves. We have challenges that you can achieve, and they unlock new things in the game. We have cheat detection to try and make it a fair playing field for everybody who's playing, and a host of other things that we need to deliver to people. Now, when it comes to delivering this kind of an experience to people and these kinds of services, a lot of game services have a very unique set of challenges that are a little bit different from things that you have to deal with if you're doing a traditional service launch. Millions of people will buy this game, pre-buy the game, and then midnight, the game's about to launch, everyone lines up at GameStop, Best Buy, or whatever store that they want to buy this game at, and they'll take the game, they'll go home, and they'll put it in their Xbox all at the same time. And your service goes from having next to no load to having a really huge load on it in a very short amount of time. And you really need to be able to deal with this on launch day. Because one thing gamers can't stand is not being able to play the game after they've paid you money for it. Strange thing. Another thing that you need to deal with is on weekends and on holidays and other special occasions, your load is going to spike up again because people are at home and they want to play Halo. Like on Christmas, people unwrap their Xboxes, they got Halo for Christmas, they want to play it. And so you'll see some spike in the load there as well. And then over time, your load's going to taper out and you're going to see a more reasonable regular load. So when we started thinking about Halo 4 and how we wanted to build the services, we immediately decided we wanted to use Windows Azure. The idea of using platform as a service and being able to scale our services up and down when we needed to, being able to add more nodes without having to purchase new hardware, that was a no-brainer. We wanted to do that. And so we decided Windows Azure was going to be the way we went. And so we sat down and started thinking about what our services would look like in Windows Azure on platform as a service. We came up with this diagram. This is sort of the high-level overview of what a Halo Cloud service looks like. We have many of these services in production, and this is sort of a generic look at them. We have a bunch of front doors that are sitting behind the Azure load balancers, and these front door servers merely take traffic coming from games, from Xboxes, from mobile devices, and route them to our middle tier servers. These servers might be routed to directly, or we might go through some sort of queue service. But at the end of the day, most of our compute is happening in these middle tier compute worker roles. And in order to achieve high throughput and low latency, a lot of these services have a lot of statefulness in these compute nodes. In the back, these services will be storing stuff in Windows Azure Storage or in a search engine. Some of this data gets pushed off to HD Insights for us to do BI analytics and visualize what's going on in the universe. One way that I like to think about this, and some of our other engineers like to think about this, is we treat the platform as though it's a warehouse computer. Each service that we're building is one giant warehouse scale computer where our dispatcher front nodes are dispatching messages to the middle tier nodes that are basically a bunch of processors that have some state. And then the backend systems that we have, which are Azure Storage and the like, these are just our hard drives in our warehouse scale computer. And there's still one big problem that we had as we came up with this nice, beautiful, pie-in-the-sky vision for what our services were going to look like. And that is that building systems that are going to distribute themselves across large number of nodes and have high throughput, low latency with concurrency is a very hard problem. And it's one that is really hard not just to write the code, but it's hard to conceptualize and think about. And we wanted something that would make it easy for us to have conversations about how we're building all of these services that are distributed across many, many nodes in a very concurrent manner. So we decided to go with the actor model, which is a mathematical theory of computation that was developed a long time ago, before I was born. And it gives you a framework and a basis for reasoning about concurrent computation. And so this is a really nice way to think about writing cloud services that are distributed over a lot of nodes. And so then we had a challenge, what actor model are we going to use in our services? We looked around, there's a lot of different actor runtimes and systems out there. We didn't have one that met exactly the needs we were looking for, so we started thinking about writing our own. If you're going down that path, please don't do it, it's not a good idea. But we spent some time thinking about it, and then we came across a group of really brilliant guys over at Microsoft Research who happened to have thought about this problem at a much greater depth than we had, and they'd actually gone a step further than we were going, and they had thought about this problem and how it applies in cloud execution environments. And so I turned to my boss and said, we want some of that, whatever that stuff is, let's go get that and let me not have to write any more code, because I'm kind of a lazy developer. So I said, they've written it, let's just go get that. And that's when we started our conversations with Sergey and his team and came up with this crazy idea of trying to ship our stuff on Orleans in 3 months. So let's talk a little bit about Orleans, Project Orleans. Project Orleans is, like I said, a runtime and a programming model for thinking about how to build, for building distributed systems. Orleans gives you a distributed actor runtime. It's built for the .NET framework. And so it takes advantage of the asynchronous programming capabilities in .NET, async await in C#, that sort of thing. And the first thing you want to think about or understand when you're thinking about Orleans is this notion of a grain. That is the atomic unit of everything that you're building inside the Orleans system. It's effectively a .NET class, but we're going to get into that in a second. Now, all of the grains that you write in the system are going to run inside these silos. A silo is an execution container. Most of the time when you're writing your code to have Orleans, you're going to have one silo on each node in your data center or in your cluster. So all these silos are going to work together, and Orleans is going to distribute the grains that you've written across all of these silos so that they can all execute, and it's going to help you with communication and a bunch of other things. So let's dig a little bit more into this thing that I'm talking about, this actor. This is the concept that you will think about most if you're developing Orleans stuff. And like I said, an actor is first and foremost a .NET class. So the first thing you need to understand when you think about actors is a grain is that a grain type is a .NET class that you're going to write. Now, when you're interacting with other grains in the system, you're going to interact with actual specific grains. So in the slide here, I have a game grain that represents a game in the Halo universe. And we actually have one game grain for every game of Halo 4 that has ever been played. There's a grain for that. And that's the notion of an actual grain that you're going to talk to. So you might be sending a message to go and say, go get me the score from the game grain that represents the game I played last week. Or you might go and talk to the game grain that represents the game you played 5 minutes ago. These are two separate grains, but they're both game grains, so they're of the same grain type. Now, behind the scenes, there's another third thing that's operating, which is the activation, the actual instance of this grain that's running somewhere on one of your nodes in memory. It's receiving the calls, it's processing them, and it's sending the responses. Orleans is abstracting all of this away from the developer, and the developer is going to focus mainly on the grains, and all of his references are actually to the grain. He doesn't care which machine in the data center this grain is executing on. He doesn't care if that machine fails. Orleans handles all of this for the developer. And what you focus on is having your grain references and talking to these grains. So let's look at what this looks like if you're running a bunch of silos in a data center having Orleans do a bunch of this work for you. So you've got a bunch of silos, and your code is executing, so it's creating activations of these grains across machines as they need to receive messages. And I should point out that when you look at this picture, you're seeing four or five grains inside each little box that's a silo. What we actually have in production when we're talking about Halo is more on the order of somewhere around 100,000 grains running on a single server. So this is just a picture for you. But in actuality, there's usually a lot more grains running. But then again, it depends on how much memory each grain is using. Now let's say at some point in time you realize that your service is under a pretty heavy load. All your servers are running with hot CPU or you're running out of memory. All you need to do is add another node to the system. Orleans will detect this. All the silos will figure out, hey, there's a new guy here. And they'll start putting activations on that new machine to ease the load across all of your silos. Similarly, if for some reason one of your silos happens to spontaneously combust and you lose all the activations that are there, Orleans will automatically pick this up. The next time you call one of the grains that existed on that silo, Orleans will create new activations somewhere else, and it will route the message there. And as a developer, you don't know about this. You don't need to worry about this. This is just going to happen for you. Now, if that node becomes available at a later point in time, then Orleans will start using it and putting more activations on it. And again, this isn't something you deal with. It's something you'll think about when you go look at your logs. You're like, huh, that machine died yesterday. Oh, well. And then you move on. So I want to come back to the concept of grains for a second here. One of the things that people sometimes ask is, how does Orleans differ from other actor programming models? And the concept of virtual actors here is one of the interesting contributions I think Orleans has made to thinking about actor and actor programming. And in particular, I think it's very useful when you're thinking about programming actors in the cloud. First thing to think about, like I said before, you talk to grain instances, you have references to grains. You never create a grain. There's no notion of saying, make this grain. There's no notion of saying, delete this grain. The grains are just there, and you just start talking to them. You get a reference to the grain, and you start talking to it. So if I want to talk to, for example, Sergey's player grain, I just get an instance to it, and I start sending messages. I get a reference and send messages. I don't know whether it exists, and I actually don't really care. I just start sending messages, and something happens behind the scenes. It's also important to think about the fact that this means that there's no notion of a failure state for grains. Grains aren't in a failed state. They're just there, and you send messages to them, and you can handle failures to an actual call that you made, but the grain itself doesn't fail. You can then turn around and send more messages to the grain. The actual activations that represent the grain somewhere in your cluster of silos, those will get created for you by the Orleans system if they need to be. If they don't get called for a long time, Orleans will automatically garbage collect the activations to free up space for other activations. This is why I'm able to say we have one grain for every player that has ever played Halo 4. We have one grain for every game that has ever been played in Halo 4. So there's billions of grains out there, but not all of them have activations in memory at any point in time. The life cycle of these grains is all managed by Orleans. And if a server fails, again, those activations, putting them on another machine, the Orleans runtime handles that seamlessly for you. This allows developers to develop their code without worrying about the location of grains at all. There's this notion of location transparency. You don't think about how many nodes you have in the system, worry about an IP address. And this is something that's really, I found really valuable, because has anybody here ever thought about which memory stick in their computer their variable was being stored in? Do you ever think about that? Or does anybody here actually think about saying, oh, I need to page this thing back into physical memory from virtual memory because it was on disk and I had a page miss? Like, you don't worry about that sort of thing when you're developing locally. So why should I worry about that sort of thing when I'm developing for the cloud? Orleans abstracts all of this away from me and makes it much easier for me to develop stuff. So there's one last thing I want to dig into before we actually start looking at the code of writing an Orleans grain, and that's the execution model for grains. When Orleans creates an activation of a grain for you, that activation is single-threaded. This means that you don't have to worry about shared execution happening on a single activation. If a call is happening inside my grain, that call finishes before another call is allowed to be processed on that same grain. There's no shared state because of this, and so I don't have to worry about concurrency hazards or race conditions amongst my grains. And I still get to have high throughput because I have millions of these grains, and so I have the nice performance benefits, but I don't have to worry about having locks and using thread safe constructs inside my grain, I know that my grain code is going to be thread safe because it's single threaded. And instead, what I do is Orleans makes all of my code be asynchronous, so I effectively get this nice cooperative multitasking of grains. So I can have 100,000 grains on a server. That doesn't mean I'm going to have 100,000 threads concurrently running. Orleans is going to multiplex the execution of code amongst the available threads on the system. So let's dive straight into what it means to develop grains, and let's look at a very simple example of that. So let's look at the grain hello world. So the simple way to define your grain is you start out by defining an interface that people will use to talk to your grain. When people get a reference to your grain, they'll get a .NET interface instance, and they'll send messages to the grain through that. So this is a very simple interface. The method there is say hello. You pass a string in, and it's going to give you a string back. There are two things I want to point out here. The first thing is that there's this marker interface, iGrain, that iHello is going to derive from. And this allows Orleans to know that iHello represents a grain that you're trying to write. The next thing is that all grain methods must be asynchronous. You're not allowed to write synchronous code in the system. Everything must return a task. This allows the cooperative multitasking that I was talking about earlier. And this tends to work very nicely, especially now that you have async await in C sharp. It's pretty easy to do. And at compile time, you get an error if you break any of these rules. So following on from that, an implementation of this iHelloGrain is fairly straightforward. We're simply going to concatenate a string, and then we're going to return that as a task. This is a pretty straightforward implementation here. The one other thing I'd point out on this slide here is that we're deriving from grain base, which you must do when you're implementing a grain. And there are some methods in grain base that you can choose to override if you want to do some interesting things with activations and stuff. I'll mention that briefly later. So the next slide, more interesting, is how do you talk to grains? I've got my client code. It now wants to start sending messages. Or how do other grains talk to one another? And so this is an example of a static method in a client that is talking to a grain. The first thing that you notice here is there's a factory class, HelloFactory. Now, where'd that come from? What happens is because I defined my iHello interface a couple slides ago, at compile time, the Orleans tools will automatically generate this factory class for me that I can use to go and get a reference to a grain. Like I said, you don't think about activations here. All you think about is the actual grain, the grain that represents the game you want to talk to or the player you want to talk to, and this is how you get a reference to that grain. So now you've got this iHello instance. That iHello instance actually represents, it's a reference to a grain that's somewhere in the Orleans system you want to make a call to. So on that next line, you see an await call where we make an asynchronous call to the say hello method. And what the Orleans runtime is going to do is it's going to find where that grain exists, and it's going to route the message there. And then when that message is completely processed, you're going to get the response here. You're not thinking about what machine that grain lives on. You're not thinking about whether that grain exists. You're simply making an async call, and you're going to get a response here. And that's a much simpler way to deal with this thing than thinking about IP addresses and URIs and things like that. This is a very simple way to write your code. The other thing I'll point out there is when you call getGrain, you give the grain an identity. So every grain has to have some key that represents it. If it's a player, it might be the player's ID. If it's a game, it might be the ID of the game that you played. But every grain needs a unique identifier that identifies it within the system. And that's something that you pass in when you call getGrain. So that's a fairly simple example. But it doesn't really get you to learn about all the nice features of Orleans. So let's dig deeper. Let's go and talk about another service, present service. This is a more realistic example. And the service I'm about to walk through is very similar to the present service that we built to enhance the presence experience in Halo. So what do you need in a present service? A present service is usually built so that people can find out what's going on with their friends. Like, which of my friends are online? If they're online, what game are they playing? Can I join them in the game? And then other clients that are playing in this environment can send up their status about what's going on in the game so the present system can know what's going on across the entire universe. And let's walk through this actual presence example in a little bit more detail so that you guys have an understanding of what's going on before we get to the code. So let's say you have a game client, And that game client is going to send up information that we call a heartbeat about what's going on in the game at right now. So it sends a heartbeat to one of the front door machines because it's sitting outside your data center. And that front door is going to simply forward that call on to a presence grain. This presence grain in our world was doing some work, CPU intensive work, as a matter of fact, to decrypt, decompress, like deserialize the packet that came in, because it came in as a bunch of bytes that were encrypted and all sorts of stuff. In some cases, you might not have a need for this, but we did. It then takes from this information the identity of the game that that client is playing and figures out which game grain to route that message to. And so it sends a message to that game grain and it calls a method that says, hey, update your game status. I just got a heartbeat. Then that game grain looks at that heartbeat and it does some interesting things. It's going to look and say, hey, there's a couple of new players in this game, so I'm going to call them and tell them to join the game. And there's a bunch of people who used to be inside this game who are no longer here. So it then calls them and says, hey, get out. You're no longer playing this game. In this way, every player grain in the system knows what that player is doing at the current moment in time as they're part of the game. And this is useful because later you can have a client come along and say, hey, I want to know about this particular player. What is he doing in your game system right now? He just wants to know what the status of the current player is. That client can first call to the player grain, and the player grain might say, I don't have a game. There's no game here. Or it might say, yeah, this player is playing in game A. So then the client can go to game A and say, hey, I'd like to know what's happening in game A. And game grain A can then push real-time updates of what's going on. Every time it gets a heartbeat, it can push it out to that client to say, hey, here's an update of what's going on in the game. So that's the present service that we're going to walk through here and walk through the actual code for now. So let's start with the heartbeat. Like I said before, the presence grain has only one method in it. It receives a heartbeat from a game. And it does some stuff in the heartbeat decrypt. And for us in particular, there's a lot of CPU intensive work that was going on there. But once it's done all its decryption, deserialization stuff, then it can take that heartbeat data, and there's two pieces of information there. There's the game that the person is playing and the current status of the game. And the status has two pieces of information in it. It has the game score, and it has a list of the current players in the game. So now, you can see on that line down there that the heartbeat method is going, again, to a grain factory and saying, OK, now I know the game grain that I want to talk to. Please give me a reference to this game grain. And it's instantly getting that back. And then it can make an update game status call on the game grain. And it takes the task that it got returned, and it returns that so that it will be done when that game grain's call is done. So let's look at the game grain, because that's a little bit more involved, and that's a grain that has a little bit of meat inside it. So the first thing that you'll notice on this slide here is that the game session grain has a status field. So that means every game grain is storing state about the status of the game. There's another piece of information that is storing is a list of subscribers. And that Observer Subscription Manager class there is a helper class that Orleans gives you to help you manage people who are interested in subscribing to updates from your grain. If your grain wants to push updates to people, that's a useful helper class that will help you do that. The other thing that the game grain keeps is a list of players who are currently in the game. And so the activate async and deactivate async methods here are empty, but these are examples of methods that you can override in your grain class if you wanted to write some code that was going to run when your game grain got activated or when it was deactivated. You could go pull some stuff from storage or whatever. In this case, we're not doing anything in there. That next method there, subscribe for game updates, that's the method that clients can call to go and say, hey, I want to subscribe and receive updates from this grain as new heartbeats come in. And we'll see what that looks like in a second. So if we look at this update game status, there's two things that are happening. When a game grain receives a game status heartbeat, the first thing it does is it goes through all the players and says, those of you who are new, join the game. Those of you who are no longer here, please get out. And then it goes through and it updates all subscribers and says, hey, here's the latest game status based on what it received in the heartbeat. So let's look at what the code for that looks like. The first thing that you'll see here is we store the status into the status field so that we have a reference to the last status update that the game received. And then we have this for loop here. In this for each loop here, we're iterating over all the players that have joined the game since the last time we received an update. We do that by comparing our hash set of players with the players that are in the new status update. And then we iterate over all the players, and we go and again use the player grain factory method to get a reference to that player grain so we can send them a message. Again, I'm just getting a grain reference. I'm not thinking about whether it's on my machine or some remote machine. I don't worry about any of that. And then I'm going to call each of them serially, and I'm going to wait for them to join the game. Now, this isn't the most efficient way to do this, and we'll see a different way to do this in a second, because in this case, I'm calling each player grain, and then I'm waiting for them to get back to me before I move on to the next player. And in a real-world scenario, you kind of want to call all the player grains in parallel and then wait for all of them to tell you they're done joining the game. And so we'll see that in a second. Another thing that's really interesting, and this should really be blowing your mind right now, is I'm calling a player grain, which could be running on another machine, and I don't know where that node is. It could be on the moon. But I'm passing a this pointer in there. That's a pointer to a local thing that is definitely in my memory space, and I'm calling another grain that could be on another machine. What's going on here? What's going to happen here is Orleans is going to know that this is a reference to a grain that you're passing in to a method call that's going somewhere off your box, potentially off your box. Orleans will convert this to a reference, and because Orleans gives you this location transparency, you can take that reference and you can do anything you want with it. You could persist it to a database, you could hand it off to another grain, you could do whatever you want, and it will always be usable because, like I said, grains always exist, so grain references are always useful. And Orleans knows how to convert a normal .NET object reference into a grain reference before it sends it off the box, if it sends it off the box. The last thing I want to point out here is there's a try-catch block here. One of the nice things that Orleans does for you is if you make a call to a remote grain and an exception occurs there, Orleans will handle propagating that exception back to you. That grain could, again, be on another machine. Orleans handles that for you. And if we didn't catch this exception here, it would propagate the exception to whoever called the update game status call. And so just like with normal .NET programming, when you have exceptions bubbling up the stack, now you have exceptions bubbling around your nodes if you want to handle exceptions that way. And so you have this option of dealing with exceptions. So let's look at the rest of the update game status method. In particular, this next section, we're doing the same thing, except we're calling all the player grains and saying, you're no longer in the game, please leave. But in this case, if you look at the top there, we're creating a list of tasks. And so as we call each player grain and tell them to leave, we're simply adding the task that we get back for them to leave to this list. And then at the bottom there, we wait for all of the tasks to complete before we move on. So this is a much better way of calling a lot of grains if you want to do that within one of your grains, because it allows you to make calls to a bunch of grains, and then you wait for all of them to get back to you instead of waiting for one of them to complete before you move on to the next one. So this is a better way to do that. The last thing that the update game status method does is it uses a notify method on that helper class to basically go through all the list of people who have been added as subscribers and call the update game score method on them to say, hey, you asked to be notified when something new happened in the game. Here you go. The game score has been updated. So I want to dig into that a little bit more in a second. But before we go there, let's take a look at the player. Let's take a quick look at the player grain, because that's a fairly simple grain. Player grain is doing just one thing. When you tell it to join the game, it basically updates its internal state about what game the player is currently in. Now, this is in this example. In Halo, we do a lot more in this space because we keep a lot more state. But you get the picture here. Basically, the player grain is keeping track of which game each player is currently in. And when you tell it to leave the game, all it does is set the game current game to null so that you know that this player is not in any game. So now let's look at that observer pattern that I've been talking about a little bit. And the observer pattern is really interesting because in addition to wanting to be able to have grains talk to one another, you want grains to be able to push data back to a client on demand, not waiting for a client to come and call your grain to get some interesting information. And so a mobile client or any other client might come to a grain and say, hey, player grain, what game are you in right now? Player grain might say, I'm not in a game. But it might return and say, hey, here's the game grain. And it's returning that game grain reference that it received as part of its join game call. It received a reference to a grain, and it's simply returning that reference to a grain when someone else calls it. And when the client receives that reference, it can then turn around and go to the game grain and say, hey, I'd like to know about what's going on in the grain, so please update me if something interesting happens. And then the game grain is going to then push updates to this client in an as-needed fashion as new heartbeats come through the system. And so let's walk quickly through that code. On this slide here, you'll see a first interface called iGameObserver. And that interface is deriving from another interface called iGrainObserver. iGrainObserver is another special interface similar to iGrain that you write. And you derive from, you don't write iGrainObserver, you derive from it. And you write that to say, hey, I want my client to be able to receive a bunch of calls from the Orleans system. My client's not an Orleans grain itself, but I'd like it to be able to receive a lot of pushes from Orleans. And so you define all the methods that you want your client to be able to have called by Orleans inside this interface. And similar to what happens to the grain, there's some factory stuff that we're going to see in a second that makes that easy to do. And then here we have implementation of that grain observer, and all it's really doing here is simply writing out to the console when it gets new game score updates. But what's interesting to look at is what that looks like in your client as it's subscribing to these calls. So here's an example of a client that starts out and it knows a player ID, so it goes and gets a reference to that player ID's grain. And then, now that you have a reference to the player grain, you can go and ask that player grain, what's your current game? And you make an asynchronous call. When that call returns, you now have the current game of the player, if that game is not null. And you can then turn around and subscribe. But before you subscribe, you need to create this object that the silo is going to call back into when interesting things happen. So we create an instance of that GameObserver class that's simply going to write to the console when a new game update comes in. And we have this call here that's creating an object reference. So this is an interesting call here because what we are doing here is we're taking a local class within a client and we're saying, let's create a reference that again gives us that nice location transparency so grains don't have to worry about IP addresses and stuff. And let's use that, let's wrap our standard object in a reference that can then be called from within the silo. And then we call the subscribe for grain updates method and we pass in that reference. And so now when heartbeats come in, the game grain is going to be able to then turn around and call out to our client code, which might be a front door machine or some other code running in your system in IIS or somewhere else, and push updates to that guy, which will then turn around and push it down to your local client. And this can all happen in real time as heartbeats are flowing through the system and you've got hundreds of thousands or even millions of people playing games. All of this is happening and you have this scaling out nicely across all the nodes you have in your system and you haven't had to deal with a single IP address or worry about a machine failure because all you're doing is dealing with game grains and then under the covers, Orleans is making this magic happen. So that's a much more in-depth look at the Orleans grains and how to write Orleans classes and stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about other places where you might use Orleans. When I originally was working on Orleans and I found out how amazing it was, I started convincing myself that Sergey and team had written Orleans just for me. Like they were thinking just about me when they made Orleans. It turns out that's not true at all. And Sergey busted my bubble. It was a sad day. But it turns out that Orleans was actually written to solve, like Sergey said, the problem of building high-performance concurrent applications that need to run in the cloud and making it easy to do that. So there's a bunch of other scenarios where you might be able to use Orleans if it suits you. Like if you have this complex social graph that is continuously changing. One of the challenges with that is you can't really partition a social graph easily because people add new friends and lose friends, defriend people. And so that's something where having that graph in Orleans is really easy to deal with because you're just going to be sending messages to and from friends. And there's some samples that show that sort of thing. Another interesting application of Orleans is in the Internet of Things. And there's actually a session earlier today that if you missed, you should go and watch where some guys talked about using Orleans and the Internet of Things to do some device analytics and monitor data that was coming from multiple devices. It's a really interesting talk. And then, of course, interactive entertainment is another scenario where Orleans is very useful. So near real-time analytics is a thing that's actually near and dear to my heart, and that's another example of a place where you might use Orleans. You might have lots of devices out there. They're all doing all kinds of interesting stuff, and you want to collect data about what these devices are doing. One way you could do that is, in your system, you could have grains that represent each of your devices that are out there in the wild. And when your device wants to report data, it sends messages into the system. Orleans grains can take these bits of information. They could forward them on to other grains that might aggregate that data. And then those grains might forward them on to other grains and say, hey, send an email to this person that this device needs updating. Or they could automatically send back some control data to a device saying, hey, reduce the temperature in this room or turn off this sprinkler system somewhere. And these are all things that you can do really easily with Orleans grains because it scales out really well to millions of grains inside your system without you having to worry about that. Another case that's really interesting, and we actually use this in a couple of areas in Halo, is you can use Orleans to do some really intelligent caching. So if you have a lot of data that's backed, stored in, let's say, Azure Storage or a SQL database, you can have Orleans grains act as proxies to go and retrieve this information. They get the information from the database, they forward it on, and then they can cache that information for subsequent calls. But you can do other interesting things like increment the count of the number of times someone received this, or run some ACL checks to make sure that users are actually able to do the kind of writes that they're trying to do. And because Orleans grains are all single-threaded, the activations are single-threaded, you can leverage this when you're writing your grains to not worry as much about correctness issues when people are writing to the same data store inside your database, because you've got that single-threadedness going on with your grains. And then you get the benefit of Orleans automatically activating this cache object, this grain, for you somewhere in your data center. You don't care where. And you also have that LRU eviction thing that happens. If no one actually goes and accesses this object, Orleans is just going to kick it out of memory. And so you've got this nice write-through cache system. Very easy to build. Like I said, we use this in a couple of services in Halo today. So now I want to talk a little bit, come back to this slide I had before, and talk about Halo's experience with Orleans, because I sort of walked through an example of a service close to what we built, and we built a couple of other services, and I originally started with this slide. But now that you've heard how we use Orleans, it's pretty easy to think about the fact that we don't spend a lot of time agonizing or worrying about anything that has to do with the underlying infrastructure, and what we spend our time thinking about is we've got some grains running inside these machines, and we focus on those grains, and we focus on the front door machines that we have in our data center. That's pretty much all we worry about when we're writing our services in Halo. I mean, at certain points in time, we'll need to go and configure a storage account or create a service bus queue here and there. But for the most part, most of our developers, they're focusing on grains. And this yields really nice developer productivity. We have a familiar programming paradigm. We've got .NET, C#, async await with tasks. Gives you a nice smooth learning curve. We don't have to worry about concurrency as we're building our services. And Orleans helps us do this failure handling thing where it actually propagates the exceptions for us. This allows us to build services where we start out with a really crazy schedule like 3 months and we're actually able to achieve that sort of thing. This allows our developers to separate their concerns. Developers who are sitting at the top of the stack there writing grains, they don't think about a server. They're like, I know what a service is. I don't know this server word. Like, I'm not familiar with it because I'm just writing my grains and they're running in the Orleans system. And then there's other developers who will then put on their hats and say, okay, how many actual servers do I need? How many silos do I need? But you have this separation of being able to do those as two separate things and not worrying about intertwining your application code with code that should be dealing with the nodes in your data center and uptime and availability and things like that. And that's a really nice thing. Another huge benefit that we get from Orleans is the scalability by default. We get near linear scaling to hundreds of thousands of requests per second without having to go and write special code that's dealing with things like, oh, there's a new machine, let me stop doing this here and let me have that work happen over there. All of that's happening under the covers for you with Orleans. This gives us nice, efficient uses of resources, and this table that you see here is actually a real test that we ran as we were trying to do this crazy project to move our presence service into Azure with Orleans. We ran tests in the lab, and like I said before, these were some very CPU-intensive stuff that we were doing in our heartbeats, and yet we were still able to get some very nice, smooth, linear scaling as we just threw more machines at the problem. It just scaled really well. And that was a huge benefit to us because it allowed us to achieve the scale that we needed and be able to deliver our services on time without having to bog ourselves down and trying to figure out how to write code that was going to do the right thing after the fact. And so hopefully I've given you guys a nice overview of what it takes to build a really nice service in Orleans and perspective on how we went through this process of adopting Orleans in Halo and getting ourselves ramped up and started on it. And so I really think there's only one more thing for you guys to do, which is go out, get Orleans, go get the samples. The samples are up on Codeplex, and there's a lot of really interesting samples. That presence sample, there's a version of that up there on Codeplex. I've also heard that a bunch of guys over in EMEA have written some really, really nice samples as well. I'm looking forward to taking a look at some of those. And when you get a chance, if you want a demo of this, just go play Halo. That'll give you a demo of Orleans. Or go check out Halo Waypoint. Anytime you're looking at statistics for a game in Halo Waypoint, when you're digging into it, you're hitting an Orleans grain in the back end. Like I said, every single thing that you see there about your games, most of that, I'd say 95% of that, is coming from an Orleans grain that's retrieving that from Azure Table for you. And when you store stuff using user-generated content, again, you're using Orleans. So that's all I have for you guys. I think I have some time to take questions if anybody has them.
Oh. Yeah. How do you handle versioning of the grains?
Versioning of the grains? We, in our services today, just deploy a new copy of the grain and we replace the old one. Now, because your grains, today we do a VIP swap. And so we just swap in a whole new set of grains, and they'll take over from the old grains. And at that point, the only versioning you need to worry about is if you've got something persisted in like Azure storage, and you just need to think about what this new grain is going to do with the fact that it's hitting storage that has some old data. Question?
Is there documentation about the web protocol or a C++ client or whatever other language?
For Orleans?
Yeah.
I'll let Sergey answer that.
Not at this point. So this is a binary release. So there's .NET serialization there, so it's not really easy to document. And there's nothing secret there, but it's not easy to document in binary format. It
would be very interesting to be able to have some of these components in different technology.
Yeah, that's a very good piece of feedback. Well, as a workaround, you can implement grain in C++, but I think you need more than that. That's what you're asking.
At least having the documentation, I can work by myself. It will be a good start. I imagine that asking you to create a C++ client would be much harder, but by the way, it could be interesting to have the documentation at least.
We need to look into this.
Take this as a wish.
Yeah. Thank you. That's good feedback. Thank you. You're next.
I know the slides touched on it, but how is persistence handled with regards to, I know you mentioned Azure Table Storage, but do you have to worry about sharding if you want to use a traditional database, or what are your options, and how does this help with some of that?
So I can speak to how we did it, and there's persistence stuff in the examples, and I believe there's also a blog post that's going out that will talk a little bit more about this. In Halo, we did our own persistence inside the grain because we wanted to have a lot of control over it, and you can simply just write to Azure Table or whatever storage you want in the way you want. And so we did some amount of sharding ourselves, but then what we did was we took the grain, the ID of like the player grain, for example, and used that as our way of figuring out where in Azure storage we were going to store things. So when we were writing player information, we wrote to a partition ID that was the player ID, and that the partition key was the player ID. And then everything within that partition was written to by the same player grain. And then you got that nice, again, that not worrying about multiple people trying to write to the same partition at the same time. But Orleans does have its own notion of persistence built in that you have as an option. I believe some of the samples cover that a little bit.
Yes, so this feature of declarative persistence was added after they wrote their crazy code in 3 months. So it works. You can declare an interface which defines your contract with the storage system, and then there is a layer of indirection of storage providers. So when you deploy, you configure that you want to map your grain class to a particular storage provider or particular configuration. So you can handle managing storage accounts and this mapping outside of your code.
Thanks. How does Orleans solve the problem of resolving dependencies that grains need? Is there a dependency injection, or is that even a thing in this model?
So when you say dependent, the question was, how does Orleans solve the problem of resolving dependencies that grains need? And so you're talking about like other components besides just running on Orleans that need to be on the system? Okay, so I can speak to how we, in Halo, we dealt with that by knowing like things like if I need some particular binary on the system, we'd make sure we package that. But there, like, I don't know if you want to, Sergey, you want to speak to any of the dependency injection questions?
We don't really do any dependency injection, so we expect the binaries to be deployed because that sort of
resources that the grains might need to talk to that is outside of Orleans.
So if you wanted to use a dependency injection framework within your grain to go and resolve other things, there's nothing that stops you from doing that because it's just .NET code. And then you could figure out how to integrate with whatever your favorite dependency injection system was. I don't think it would be too hard to figure out how to make that work. We're not doing that ourselves, and Orleans doesn't do that. But again, because Orleans is literally just an executable running on a box, you could write whatever .NET code you wanted and do dependency injection or resolve your dependencies in, for example, the activate method for a grain.
Gotcha. So you'd have to do a service locator.
Yes, okay. You probably have to do that.
Well, we actually have more than that. We have this hook that may solve your problem, call it Bootstrap provider, so you can mark some code in your binary, say, invoke this method when my server starts, when the silo starts, and that allows you to go and fetch, for example, some data that you want to have locally on the same node where silo runs. So there are ways to inject dependencies, but that was not really the focus of the project to help with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Question?
With the subscriber and such, is there any similarity with this with the F-sharp events or with React extension observable patterns?
So the observable pattern in Orleans specifically is very specific to the situation where you have an external client that wants to observe things that are happening within your cluster of silos. And so you could wrap that inside Rx or some other reactive type thing. I don't know that we did not do that when we were doing it, but we've talked about that sort of thing. But you wouldn't use the observer pattern within a grain, but you could build something that was very similar to the Rx observer pattern and wrap Rx in that if you wanted to use Rx inside your grains.
And I can add that we're actually right now working on more stuff in that direction, and we're collaborating with Halo guys again. So expect more interesting features coming.
Yeah.
Well, I think he was first.
Oh, yes, sorry.
No problem. So online it says, and I believe you said this is just a preview release of Orleans. Is there like a roadmap or like an ETA when a Go Live license would be available to use in production?
Well, I have to put my official hat now to answer this question. So I lead the group in research, and research doesn't release products. So there is developer division, that is actually doing the preview. And that's their way of gauging interest and deciding on the final plans to release it. So it's actually released by developer division. Okay. I defer those questions to them, personally.
Yeah, can you say anything about how you, it seems like there'd be a problem with sort of silo affinity or resource allocation. I mean, are you like analyzing grains to figure out what kind of resources they're gonna need in terms of CPU and memory, are you configuring that?
So again, you wanna take that?
It's an interesting question about affinity and resource management and hints from the application. So it may sound counterintuitive, but what we discovered, the best way to avoid hotspots in the system, because we're talking about deploying on dozens or hundreds of servers, so we discovered that a pattern that actually works pretty well is random placement. Even though you have some cost of the messaging, it's really nothing because you have under millisecond round trip between two servers. But that prevents hotspots. On top of that, we have the notion of placement strategies. We have a few and can easily build more where you can hint at some locality. For example, you can say, I prefer, when I make a call to this grain, if it doesn't exist, try to place it locally to me, to the caller. So if it wasn't in memory, it will be created locally, for example, and save the network hop. Sort of hooks like that to hint the system. But in general, we try to avoid application dictating where to put things.
How do you keep all of the actively running game data running on the same server at the same time so that you don't have too much messaging overhead?
How do you mean? You mean with the grains?
So you have 16 players on a particular server, and they're all needing to be communicating at the same time, and they're all needing updates all at the same time. Is that all running on one server to keep it all fast, or is it still relatively distributed?
So are you talking specifically about the gameplay or about presence information?
Well, when you have a lot of stateful servers.
Yeah, so with a stateful server, for example, in the presence case, all of these 16 players could actually be communicating with completely different servers. We don't need to do the work to keep them on the same server. Kind of like Sergey said, the best performance comes from random placement, we found. And so when I go to connect to the system to say, I want to know about my friends or I want to know about the players in my game, then it will make calls to those player grains, and Orleans under the covers will handle going to those grains and getting back the state. But that's actually pretty fast within my cluster of silos, even though it might have to make a hop to another machine.
So I guess it'd only make a difference if the state was larger?
If the state was very large that you had to pass across the system, then that might make it a problem. It depends, like, but you'd have to be dealing with some pretty large state, I think, for it to be very noticeable.
When a player subscribes for an update, basically everything's happening with polling. The player is basically polling constantly for any updates for a particular game, for example.
So from in the diagram, I had the front door that the player's client machine connects to. Between that front door and the grain, it's not polling. The grain has an ability to push messages out to that front door machine, even though that machine is not part of the silo system. Now, between that and the actual client is completely up to you. So I specifically avoided talking about any wire level protocols between the front doors and the clients because you could use anything you want. You could use SignalR, and then you're not going to be polling.
Right.
And you could use WebSockets yourself if you wanted to write down at the WebSocket level, and you still wouldn't be polling. Or you could poll if you needed to.
And those references that are being passed back and forth, could they be passed between namespaces in Azure just as the same as being passed between VM instances within the same namespace?
So currently, the way we use Orleans, all the silos that we have are all within a single Azure service. So their IP addresses are local to that service, and they can't. We don't actually. I mean, I don't think it would be super hard for us to be able to communicate if we use
like if a player in Asia is playing someone in South America, they're all going in one data center,
today
one
it's
namespace.
Today it's all in one data center, but that's just a question of how your silos are placed and whether your silos can communicate with one another. If your silos can communicate with one another, then you could, and you tried to deploy it, I think it would work. But you'd need to build a virtual network that was distributed in order to do that.
Okay, and then the updating and the messaging, again, you're just going to the front end, but from there it's the same challenges, whether you're going to do long polling or WebSockets or TCP or whatever your
mechanism is. Between your client and your server, yes.
Right.
And in our case, we do an HTTP post because it works pretty well. You have keep alives and you're not worrying about new connections. Next question. Oh, sorry, I didn't see who. You go first.
You had a graph showing the scalability of message throughput. What kind of latency were you getting on that? I mean, obviously throughput is one thing, but you know the latency responses coming back.
That's true. Sergey, those were the lab tests. Do you remember?
If I remember right, we kept track of a maximum latency there because we're worried about highest. And it was, if I remember right, in like 20, 30 millisecond max. So mean latency was. In the 10 millisecond.
Yeah. We have a need for very, very low latency because in the presence system, for example, this presence system is used to allow players to join their friends in a game. If my friend's playing a game, I want to join him. So if I have any reasonable amount of latency, then he might already be done with the game or something like that. So we have we need to have a very low latency.
So is it possible to query the system to say, okay, I want to find all of the players that are winning right now, you know, across all of the games, and it can be millions of them, right? So Is it possible to do that?
All the players that are winning, you said?
Yep. So who's first place right now?
Who's in first place across all of the system?
Yep.
I think that would be possible. One of the interesting things that we do is, as part of the Halo Presence service, we actually tell you how many players are playing in every game type across the universe. And we do that by doing aggregation. So a bunch of grains will aggregate to a single grain that will then turn around and aggregate to another grain. So you can collect large amounts of information without having a million people call into a single place. So there's a couple of patterns that you can use to achieve that sort of thing. But getting a list of a million people, that might be a little challenging. It's not something I've thought about trying to do, but you might be able to do it. I don't know, Sergey, do you want to comment about
I think there are several patterns there. For example, your player grain may register whenever grain starts with some directory grain and say, hey, I'm starting the game X. It's not going to constantly communicate just the fact that it started the game or joined the game. You can handle millions of grains periodically saying they started the game. That's not a problem. You can keep this list if that's okay. Or you can do the staged aggregation, which is a more scalable pattern where you have intermediate aggregators and then one or more layers of them so that calls to a final aggregator are limited just from a previous layer. So patterns like that, but it's pretty easy to implement.
Okay. And how long would that take? You know, if I want to do a query, would that take also within the 10 milliseconds? I mean, not returning all the 1 million, but just counts, you know, first 10, first 20 players, something like that.
So if I was going to build that, I wouldn't actually do the query to fan out and go and ask players what their scores were. Mm-hmm. I'd actually have the players send scores in periodically. So you could go in at a point in time and there'd be one grain that says, I know the top 100 players. Okay. So if I was actually having to build that, I would have every grain on a machine submit to a single silo, all the grains would submit to what's called a stateless grain. And they'd all submit to that one stateless grain on the silo, and it would maintain the top 100 players on that silo. And then all of the silos would then send their results of the top 100 players to a single grain somewhere in the system. And that guy would resolve out of, like, maybe I have 100 silos. So it's going to get a list of 10,000 names. And it would basically combine them, sort them, and it would return the actual top 100 players. But what it would do is, when it receives the update, it would update its own internal list of the top 100 players. So when then you come and request the top 100 players, it's going to return to you the most recent list that it's computed. That might be behind by a couple of milliseconds, depending on how fast the data is flowing through the system. But this is the actor model. Like, you're not going to get strong concurrency at any point in time.
I was just told that we ran out of official time, so we need to officially wrap up. But we can continue Q&A unofficially to go off the stage.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.